Hello, everybody, and welcome to the October 2015 Q&A episode of Weekly Manga Recap. It's Why Rotten Rollo T. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing all right, Nick, even though I'm now accepting the fact that we are in the thralls of winter.
We're not.
Well, I am. I had to, within the past 24 hours, Nick, I've had to turn the heat on in my house, I've had to purchase an electric blanket, and I've had to wear my heavy jacket into work. It has gotten too cold here. And by too cold, I mean cold at all. So for the next 5 to 6 months, this is going to be my life. The only thing that keeps me going is this eggnog chai latte, which is about done with. So I'm actually pretty aware of my own death right now. Yeah. I'm really kind of cognitively aware of just how much little enjoyment I have left remaining.
Our orgies today.
Fuck you. You miserable Floridian with your good weather.
I wasn't even aware it was autumn yet. Like, it didn't feel like it, you know. I was like, is it autumn yet? Well, I guess it's the middle of October. Yeah, I guess it would have to be, wouldn't it? But, yeah.
I was so hoping we'd get, like, 2 more weeks of, like, okay weather, and then it would start to get cold. Nah, that was too much dreaming. I should just learn to give up dreaming, I think, Nick.
Yes. As you should.
Yeah, but, I guess we're going to do a podcast.
Yes, but I mean, apparently all of the questions are going to be answered with, you know, this very dull tone, because we realize that it doesn't matter what knowledge we impart upon you, because we're all going to die.
Unless we impart so much knowledge onto them, then they inscribe it into mortar, into like giant bricks made of obsidian that will stand the destruction of Earth and be discovered by aliens far into the future. These aliens with their 7 eyes and many, many hands with many fingers will be like, oh, Kaguya was a shitty villain. I'm glad I knew this. Thank you. Without this, I would have been lost in this universe, but I feel like you've answered everything.
All right, so for the sake of educating aliens in the future, we'll keep on talking about manga then, I guess.
Thank God.
All right. Yeah, let's answer some questions.
I thought we were going to start off with a question to each other. Wasn't that what you posed last time?
Was it? Oh, fucking no. All right, you go first.
I was going to say, Nick, I've recently started, well, I shouldn't say started, I've gotten a good way through, but I've been watching Gravity Falls. Have you watched Gravity Falls at all? What say you?
I've watched about the first half of the first season, a little bit more than that. I just kind of randomly stopped watching it at some point. I didn't pick it up again, but I should get back to it, because it's a good show.
It is good. It's a funny show. Everyone sold me on it by being like, no, like, even though it's for a kid's show, you know, it's like the mystery and it's crazy. And I was like, you know, it's really oozy that, like, the first 2 episodes, or, like, 3 or 4 have, like, heavy teases that something big's going on, and then it's, like, 17 episodes in a row and nothing fucking happens. And then they're there's a plot.
You gotta enjoy the individual ones. You can't just be like, oh, I wonder what's gonna happen next. You're just gonna be like, well, that was funny how Mabel got tricked out on sugar and dreamed of a weird dolphin with muscle arms that grow extra arms that shoots lasers that she calls Aoshima. That's pretty great. You can't just be like, oh, and I wonder what they'll do in order to progress the mystery of the tome and stuff like that, because it's just like, no, we're probably not really gonna discuss it at all until the season finale.
Yeah, we don't have time for that. We have another episode with Seuss, where he does something. And when he's there, maybe. I don't know. There is a great episode, though, I will say. My favorite episode thus far of the entire series is the one where he brings a Street Fighter character into the real world.
That is pretty good.
Because there are some amazingly great, like, subtle jokes in that one that I adored.
Place it on the ground!
It's like, where did you get that lead pipe? I found it in a barrel! Street has a lot of dangerous weapons on it.
Oh, God. Yeah, I love that show.
There you go. Good to know. Hey, Chris, how's that chai eggnog latte? I'm like, oh, God.
Did you ever get around to watching Avatar, the cartoon series?
I've watched the first season. I haven't got beyond that. I was watching it at the time with my then-girlfriend. We were going through it together because she was a huge fan, and she wanted me to see it. We got to the second season, and basically that's when the show got taken off of Netflix. So our goal was then, I think they may still be around somewhere. I, at one point, owned the second season, Because the goal was that we'd watch through DVDs, but it was just a break between the Netflix to...
Oh, I gotta switch the discs out.
Well, no, it was just such... It was a break between when we were watching Netflix to when I actually got the DVDs that just stopped being, like, the thing we did all the time. So, I just haven't gotten around to it. It's something I want to do, because I've heard that's really when the show gets great, but...
Oh, yeah, it is. Having a significant other to watch stuff with is a pretty good way to kind of marathon stuff, because, yeah, you're just like, one of you will remind the other, kind of, in a way.
Yeah. Well, in the inverse, she refused to watch The Wire at all, because, yeah. So it really was a one-way street.
Alright, well, yeah, I literally just thought of that, because one of my... I actually have the second season DVDs right here in front of me, so, yeah.
Well, all right, well, you push them through the computer. I'll start pulling on things on my computer, and maybe it'll just materialize through. Yeah. I think I have it. Hold on. This is MASH Season 2.
God damn it.
It always happens. It's still pretty good, I think, you know. MASH is solid, kind of.
All right, I'll just enjoy this DVD cover art by myself, then. It looks so awesome.
Is there any nudity in it?
No.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a bummer, but I guess...
You have to go on the internet to find Avatar nudity.
Not very far, I seem to have discovered it intentionally.
Well, a popular cartoon has porn?
Unpopular cartoons have porn. I don't think it would take me very long at all to find Street Shark porn. And I don't think I ever want to find out if I'm right or not.
Neither do I. Were there... Well, never mind. That's not even a relevant question. I was going to ask if there were actually female characters on that show, but really not necessary for porn, is it?
We don't need that.
There are animal anthropomorphic creatures in it. That means that there's probably porn of it. So there you go. Mm. Anyway, let's talk about the actual questions we got.
Let's do this thing.
Yeah, okay. So we got through, I guess, 2/3 of August last time. I actually prepared myself by reading through all of the questions through September, and I think I can answer most of them.
Okay.
Readily. So maybe we'll actually get through more this time. Yeah, let's start with a question from Brendan, who says, contemplating the superhero manga, can you think of any superheroic scenarios you'd really love to see in them? My own thought on that is that in My Hero Academia, I'd love to see a classic superheroic moment with the hero stumbling onto someone attempting suicide and talking them out of it. Except I'd love to see that moment, the hero role, being filled by Bakugo. Which sounds like it would be very strange to me.
Sounds like I'd be not out of character for him. I just feel like he'd be like, isn't there like a anything else going on? Fine. Can I blow up the building that way he can't jump? Like, can that be the way I say
it? Don't kill yourself there. I won't be able to beat the crap out of you.
This building's gonna kill you. I'll take it out.
No, don't shoot yourself. I'll blow up the gun.
I mean, I understand what he means, though, because that's like, you know, in this age of Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, everyone's like, you know, Superman's too dark. You know, they pull that image. I forget what it's from. I think it's like Superman All-Star Superman. Where Superman, like, basically, like, there's a kid up on a roof. It looks like he's about to jump. And Superman kind of, like, lands behind him. It's like, your therapist really did need, like, have an emergency come up. I forget the kid's name, like, Wally or something like that. And the kid just hugs Superman, and, like, it's supposed to be...
I thought it was a girl. I'm not sure, but maybe I'm remembering it.
I vaguely recall the name being masculine. I mean, it could be a girl. I mean, but...
Or it could be a transgender kid, and maybe that was why they had to see a therapist. Who knows?
I don't know. It could be a lot of different...
Superman helped a kid. That is the important part.
Yeah, Superman helped someone who was considering suicide.
And not just by, like, no, you're not committing suicide, and grabbing them and taking them, not like Bob Parr, you know, it's like, oh, I caught you as you were falling, and fuck you.
Yeah, no, it's just that notion of, like, that's what Superman should be about, you know, being that guy who can help in any situation, no matter how big or small it might be. So, I can grasp that, and I can guess, grasp the Bakugo thing. I guess to the question, it's basically...
What scenario would we like to see, yeah.
I'm going to go with one maybe a bit odd, but I want to see... Asui? Is that the frog girl's name?
Asui, yes.
Asui? I want to see her help the police in foiling a bank robbery.
Really?
Yes, because I've learned something very important, Nick. I was curious as to why Asui was number 2 in the American My Hero Academia polls.
Right, right.
And I've been instructed by many people it is because she has a very loyal following in the furry community.
Well, it makes sense.
I myself am not a furry. Just not doesn't do it for me. But I want to appreciate Asui in a better sense. So I feel like if we give her this scene, she could show herself off more, and I can be like, okay, I can grasp why this is the number two character then. And I feel like the traditional bank robbery foiling, especially if she's like helping out the police department, it's a pretty cool thing. I'm always appreciated whenever a superhero has like a battle they're fighting and they make a deal out of the fact that the police department's like kind of around there and helpful, as opposed to just being like, we're going to stand off to the side, wait for Superman to handle this. I'm getting coffee and all bumbling and shit. Right. Cops are real heroes, Nick.
No, that makes sense, though. I like the, yeah, instead of just like, oh, they did all the work, it's, you know, working together with someone.
Yeah.
It's different. I actually have something in similar vein. It's not as, like, much a moment or scenario. I just want to see more emphasis on, like, teaming and stuff. And we've gotten that recent chapters of My Hero Academia. You know, their test is to have two people work together. But I want to see something like, you know, a team of five or something like that. And have them, you know, learn to work together and have it kind of be a regular thing. I want a little bit of like X-Men in this, you know, where there's a team of people working together against a common foe and stuff. Especially when you consider the fact that they're young heroes and it's kind of weird that they're being like, yeah, you know, we'll have you learn to work, you know, in random groups or on your own and stuff like that. But it's like, well, you know, couldn't you be, you know, giving them practical work? But of course, it would be dangerous to have them work on their own. So maybe you have to, you know, have them form teams with, like, a teacher as their captain or something.
It's getting close to Naruto, though. That's my only danger.
I get your point, but fuck you.
fuck Naruto. Nah, I can see it. I can dig it. I like it. Alright, move on then. Question here from North Grizzly. It says, love your work. I want to tie all my questions to wrestling. Right now, I'm done with Seth Rollins as champion. He's a great wrestler, good on the mic, but the problem is the way he's booked. It is too cowardly to the point where I neither see him as a good champion or a credible threat to anyone. My question, has there ever been a villain or character where you see that what the writer is doing with them, but they are so horribly built that you just stop caring and want to move on?
First of all, I think that Rollins probably hit his sweet spot about a month and 2 months ago, like, when he had, you know, separated himself from everyone, and then before this stupid Kane storyline started up. That's just my two bits. Ineffective villains. There are too many to count. It's, I mean, freaking completely ineffective, like, not seeming like a threat, and also being, you know, he the perfect ineffective, not fun, not interesting, or anything like that. I don't think I can think of someone who fits all of those categories, but, you know, we talked about Kaguya, for example, at the start of the podcast. Mm-hmm. Not a good villain, because, you know, introduced poorly and so on and so forth. God, she was, like, she was less interesting, less effective as a villain than, like, the entire Akatsuki in that whole group. Like, worse than Kabuto, worse than Orochimaru, worse than Sasuke, when he was a villain for, you know, a little while. Because at least you disliked him.
I would say Sting and Rogue bring to me. They weren't, I guess, maybe true villains, but at the time they were presented as antagonists. And that was something like, here's a big new, a rival character we haven't seen because the time skips happen. And these are new characters who would be challenging Natsu and Biggio. And they made such a big deal out of how awesome these guys were. And they had like their big power moment. And then they just got spanked, like, just absolutely clowned by Natsu and Gajio. But they kept trying to make it a big deal. Like, I remember when, I think it's Lecter seemingly died, like, oh, Sting's really going to go overboard. And it was like the entire time, like, this is just not going to work out. Like,
I quit.
Like, it was just one of those things, like, you really took the wind out of these characters' sail by having them fucking get clowned that early on.
Oh, God. Yeah, and Fairy Tail is chock full of horrendously ineffective villains. Like, I think that any villain that they've had in the last 4 years or so, outside of, you know, Xerath and Acmelogia, basically. The Spring and 12 jury's kind of still out on them. because, you know, we've only just recently been introduced to them. They look cool now, but give it time.
All we needed for Ursa to be like, I deflect your sand with my sand-deflecting sword and cut you in half. You're like, God damn it. Damn it!
But yeah, I mean, like, the group that, I've already forgotten their name, the guild that Gray infiltrated.
Oh, Avatar?
They were all horrible.
Yeah.
Like, not a good villain among any of them.
I can't even remember. I remember the bondage guy, and I think the girl who made stomachs sick.
And they were bad. They were terrible at what they did.
Yeah, I don't remember anything else really about them. Mm-hmm.
And then there was the group led by Mardgear, and they were not very good either. Mardgear was kind of fun, at least.
Mardgear was amusing, if only because I still don't know if it's intentional or if it was just the translation team just couldn't decide how they wanted him to speak. But, oh man, now that's another group where you're just like not a whole lot of memorable characters in that group.
I think it might have to do with the way that, like, Japanese speaking terms are kind of weird. Like, it's not ridiculously unusual for a character in anime or manga to, instead of using a first-person pronoun, to instead use their name. For example, it is considered cute for a young female character to do such a thing.
Come on, no, that never happens in any other manga, though, where someone translates it like that.
Yeah. And so, or maybe it also had to do, because I don't know actually what first-person pronoun he was using, because there are ways that you can say I in a very arrogant way, so maybe he was doing that, he was trying to do that by saying his own name, so I don't know. It did seem like a translation issue, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are some examples there. So, let's go on to a question by Miguel Hurt. Hey, Chris, Rolo is better than YOLO T. Larios, and Nick, why am I the ruler of time? Cause Freeman.
Wait, what? It was like an introspective question at first, and then it became like a rap name. It started off as like an existential crisis, and
I like
ends
mine
as a fucking Rick Ross lyric.
I like mine a lot better than yours.
I know. I don't remember mine, but yours.
Rolo is better than YOLO T. Why am I the ruler of time? Cause. Hope you guys doing well, so on and so forth. The description of the video one, in regards to Patreon goals, said that Chris may try to put on some cheap cosplays for the video editions of the show, which got me to thinking if you guys had unlimited resources or the ability to alter or change your body shape to however you want, which could even include gender as well, which manga character would you love to do a full-on cosplay of? I actually quite like this question because one of the reasons why I have not given much serious consideration to doing a lot of cosplay is the fact that there's not a great wealth of characters out there that look like me. There are so many that would be like, well, in order to look like that guy, I'd have to shave off my mustache/beard, and I don't feel like doing that. So, guess I'm not doing that.
But the magic genie comes in and says you'll get your mustache back afterwards.
Yeah. So you won't have to go through the trouble of growing it back and having that awkward in-between phase where you look like a pedophile and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I like this question. I've thought of some things that are like, you know, if I could, like, change my hair color or something like that. Oh, God. I just lost the name. Take over, Chris. Hang
okay.
on.
Well, first and foremost, gender was included, so I'll change and I'll do Noelle from Black Clover, so we could finally answer the question about what she wears underneath, why she doesn't wear pants. Maybe once I'm in the body, in the attire, I'll start to experience. I'll be like, oh, this is really actually really comfortable. This makes a lot of sense.
Someone sent us that picture. It's like, see, now we can see that Noelle wears a string thong underneath it. It's like, how do you know it's a thong?
Yeah,
you just see the side tie. It could be any form of undergarment besides.
One of the reasons I did try to lose weight, because like, it was like part of my mind, I was like, I would like to cosplay one day, and I would like to be not limited to just Arabia Fats and the fat guy from World Trigger, like fat characters. And there are characters now, I'm like, yeah, I could actually cosplay as this character or something like that, should the mood ever strike, I want to go for it. But one that I've wanted to do, but I'm like, I just can't, is Josuke Higashida from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, the fourth JoJo. I would love to do him, but the integral part of doing him, I mean, the costume itself is not too hard. It's like a weird JoJo school uniform kind of thing, so that would take a little bit of work. But the main aspect of that character is that ridiculous pompadour. And it's such an important aspect to him, his identity, and even his character, because it's like his berserk button, you don't shit on his hair. If I could have, like, I couldn't get a wig that would work for it. I'd have to have actual hair that creates that ridiculously awesome pompadour. So if I had the ability to basically change anything about me, give myself that fucking awesome-ass pompadour, and I'd fucking rock the Josuke everywhere. Maybe even to work. People would be like, that's really not work appropriate. I'm like, I don't care. Shit on my hair. I'm trying to beat you up with crazy diamond. They're like, you don't have powers. You don't have a stand. I'm just punching them in the stomach over and over again. Muda, 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 muda. So yeah, that'd be what I'd go for.
There's a couple, like, Scar from Fullmetal Alchemist. I think it would be kind of cool.
Okay.
Because
we mentioned mustache, I was like starting to think of mustache characters. I went to King Bradley.
No, I don't. Nah.
Right. Fair enough.
Oh god, that was his name. I know some people that are like, you know, I'm kind of drawn to the ones that look more kind of refined, sort of cool as well. But they're always clean cut. So, it would never work. So, not necessarily this one, but just as an example to throw out there, like, Trace Kushinada from, Gundam Wing. I don't even know if you remember that character.
I don't think I've seen Gundam Wing.
Okay. Well, he was, you know, this, like, military commander, and he was, you know, kind of youthful looking, despite being one of the older characters in the series, because, like, all the Gundam pilots are, like, 15 and younger. So,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, he was one of the adult characters. He looked and sounded really cool, but yeah, very, very clean cut and pretty looking. So, not gonna get rid of my beard to do that. Yeah.
Would you ever do Haruma?
I don't feel like I could do it justice, honestly.
You do need to have a lot of energy to be Haruma.
Oh yeah, and I'm a very, I mean, unless I start dorking out about stuff.
You have to be on
stuff,
for hours.
Right, and unless I start dorking out up about stuff, I'm actually a really low energy type of person. And, yeah. I mean, like, I can turn it on, and I can turn it on for a good amount of time, but I cannot turn it on about the type of stuff that Hiruma likes to talk about. Namely, killing people.
Blackmailing people and shit.
Also, I don't think I could be that mean to people.
Yeah, you do have to be kind of an asshole. That's really kind of how you have to.
Even,
have
like,
to
the people he that. Likes, he says, like, you know, fucking monkey to their face and stuff like that, which sounds incredibly racist.
And anytime somebody, like, comes up and asks for your autograph, you have to be mean to them, too.
All right, fucking bitch!
Yeah, here you go, here's your stupid fucking autograph. $10!
Unless you want me to spread the pictures around of you that I got, which is also really creepy.
Yeah, which is also very illegal on my part. Actually, Haruma would be in a lot of trouble.
An effective portrayal of Haruma would land you in jail, so appearance would not be the issue, I don't think.
To Lost Thief, who is surprised I went cosplay as Osamu, the question was if we could change anything about ourselves who we cosplay as. I don't have to change anything about myself to cosplay as Osamu.
You don't look unlike Osamu now that you know, you've lost weight and stuff.
So, yeah. Yeah, generally he's
a taller guy.
Darkish hair, short, glasses.
You'd have to make sure that you were very clean shaven.
Yeah, that'd be the bummer. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, no, that's solid, so.
I mean, it would be helpful in getting one of the ridiculous, you know, border uniforms, but that's about it.
Well, yeah, obviously I'm not going to walk around in my Cinnabar Island t-shirt and a pair of jeans like, I'm Osamu, everybody! They're like, are you? It looks like you just shaved and put your glasses on. I'm like, yeah, well, it's casual Osamu.
You have a Cinnabar Island shirt?
Yeah, it's fucking sweet. I got it from one of those websites. It's like
oh, the gym.
Yeah, it's like 1996 Cinnabar Island gym volcano badge on. It's pretty pimp.
I was going to get one of those, and then I realized I didn't really like any of them.
It's actually pretty sweet. I was a little skeptical at first, but I was like, nah, this is awesome enough that I'll dig it.
And I think part of it is that I wanted to really represent gold and silver, because that was like the one that I most identified with, but none of the badges look good.
No,
the badges. I was very sad when I came to that realization. the Steel Gym badge is just a fucking octagon, god damn it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I don't remember one second.
Go ahead.
Is it my question?
Oh, no, we got, there's actually two more parts to this question.
Oh, okay. Oh, good luck.
Yeah. Speaking of the video one, I believe Chris said he was trying to also port those episodes up on his YouTube page and then also finally start posting the episodes back on Channel Awesome, which got me to thinking of another weird query. What would either a channel, what would a Channel Awesome manga be like? Or if you don't want to talk about that, what would a weekly manga recap manga be like? You know, the characters and support and rivals and so on be going to that.
What a Channel Awesome manga be.
I feel like the mascot would be the same. You know, just Doug everywhere. But I think that Linkara would be the protagonist because he's the only one who like does storylines consistently and stuff. So there you go.
I guess it'd be like a comedy series.
Like I feel like
comedy occasionally just has a plot.
I feel like we would be plot irrelevant characters, but we would always have really memorable, funny lines whenever we showed up.
That's just we're giving us. We're like the Kramer of this manga.
Right. So we'd be under, you know, like cult favorites among the fan base or something like that. There you go.
I could take it. A weekly manga recap manga, by the way, I believe would be like a Bakuman-esque series where it's like us kind of detailing our rise.
What kind of podcast are we going to make, Chris?
But the big catch to it is our rival is the Woodworker podcast, who we never interact with because they're so much more successful than us already somehow.
And it's like the guy's like doing Nizuma-style woodworking it while podcasting.
He's just like, woodwork! He's just giant
elaborate.
But we never interact with them. Our characters never meet or discuss.
Third part, since you also mentioned looking for new stretch goals, have you considered having, say, the 1,000 per month goal be doing supercuts of your series, such as taking various moments and bits from your backlog and putting them all into one video, such as a supercut of the Bartolomeo for Straw Hat jokes or the Maha is dead and never coming back bits, which would be very difficult to do because we're still doing that.
It would be extremely difficult to do that, also very time-consuming.
Yeah.
If we leave it to, you know, if an audience member wants to do that, I mean, like, it's sort of like the visual editions. It wasn't anything we asked for. That's just something that Infamous Planet and Felix Stark 2 just started doing. So, you know, we give them credit for that. But I don't think anyone, unless someone has the express desire to go and find all the Bartolomeo for Straw Hat jokes.
I think it's an interesting idea, but I really think it would probably not be worth it for us to do it.
I feel like I'd go insane if that job was thrust upon me.
Is there because we don't know where all of them are. We would have to listen to the entire backlog, which would itself be hours and hours and hours and hours of work.
Yeah.
So, sorry, no. Next question, go ahead.
This is from Sean. He says, I'm a big fan of your podcast for some time now. My question is, what are your thoughts on video game adaptions of manga and or anime? And if you have any that you can note some good, if you can note any good or bad examples.
Oh, we've already answered this question before, I think, on a previous question.
Well, I think this is the inverse of it, though. This is video game adaptations of manga or anime.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so not manga adaptations, not like the Metroid manga.
I have played a few. Let's see. I've played a few of the Budokai games for Dragon Ball Z, which are basically the best ones I can think of, the best examples of them, because, you know, it's just like, here's this fighting game that is not incredibly, you know, competitive, but it's lots of fun to play, and literally every character you could possibly ask for is playable. Even the ones you didn't ask for, because...
Like, I know you've been waiting for Androids 15, 16, and I think 13 to be in here, but...
Well, 16 actually was plot relevant. Yeah. I didn't know there was an Android 15, though. Stuff like that, you know, I was like, oh, and here's another giant character that only showed up for, like, one episode in the filler arc.
I know you've been waiting eagerly for the chance to play as Cell Jr.,
remember that one Brontosaurus that Gohan befriended?
Oh, that'd be so awesome. It's just on the other side's Videl floating up there waiting for a fight. The other side's just a Brontosaurus. Still has, like, the energy beam around him, so he's flying. But he's just like...
I've also played some of the Ninja Storm games, but not as well done. It's again just kind of like, oh yeah, I want to, you know, fucking play as, I don't know, fucking Neji against Zabuza or whatever. Essentially, they're the same as, like, the Budokai in that respect, and they're not quite as well done, I think. I think that they might be slightly more balanced, quote-unquote, although I don't really know, but they're just not quite as fun to play. A little more difficult to pick up.
Now, would you count any of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Games, or is that kind of its own separate thing at that point?
I mean, that is kind of its own sort of thing. I know that it was in the reverse order as Pokemon, but I sort of lumped them in that respect. I think of the video game adaptations of Yu-Gi-Oh! To be more video game adaptations of card games.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot more of a heavy focus on the card mechanics and stuff, because you gotta follow the forbidden lists and so on and so forth, as opposed to doing a loose interpretation of what duels are like in the anime. They do tend to have, like, characters from them show up, but they actually, you know, build real versions of their decks and stuff, so they don't have any of the super broken cards that they can, or if they have a card that they always use 100% of the time, that means they're never going to be able to use it 100% of the time when you come up against their CPU in the game and stuff. So, I think of that more of an adaptation of the card game.
Fair enough. For Jump-related games, or original manga-related games, I've played One Piece World, Unlimited World, which is pretty good, on the 3DS. I've not played any of the Naruto games, actually. I should get in on it at some point. I can't remember the name of the game, but I know I played a Bleach game. It was a fighting game, shocker shockers, on the Game Boy Advance. And it was actually a pretty sweet game.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but it was cool that you were able to release Bankais in it, but it was at a point where there were only, like six or seven characters who actually even had Bankais in the game. And Kuramori's was actually pretty sweet, unlike it is in the actual series, because his was just basically, you could hit like an L and R and you just slash across the screen. It was so hard to kind of block that. So I remember always digging that. And then I played Jump Stars. I can't remember Ultra Stars or one of those. It was again on the DS. Mm-hmm. And I remember really fucking enjoying the shit out of that game.
Yeah, I was at a con last year where they had a PlayStation edition of that game, and it was pretty recent. I think it was only like a year old at that point, so it had, you know, pretty much every important Jump character you could think of. Not all of them were fully playable characters, but they had some really weird ones as supports. Like Chitoge is a support in that game.
Yeah, I do. I do think I've heard of that one.
And that's a really fun game, just because, I mean, it's really just because, like, oh, you know, I can have fucking Kenshiro go up against Jotaro and stuff like that. It's just so, you know, such fun, you know, crossover battle type stuff. Basically the same reason that the Smash Brothers games are so much fun. Just because you can have, you know, Link and Mario fight. You know, you can have Ichigo and Naruto fight.
You can have Fire Emblem character versus another one of the seven Fire Emblem characters in gameplay.
How many more Pokemon are going to be put in this game?
Well, we have to get Venusaur and Blastoise, do all the starters.
Look, we had all of Baby Bowser's siblings put in this game, so shut up.
Yeah, they're all under Bowser Jr., though. One character who really, ultimately, should have probably just been Eggman. It really is an Eggman character that's just not an Eggman character for some reason.
Step it up!
Come on. I had another one that was on the tip of my tongue, though, and I just lost it. The only one I can notice being absolutely awful, and I mentioned it during the Shaman King episode, but Shaman King Legacy, I think it was called, is just a horrendous Pokemon clone that's just the absolute worst, so don't ever get that. Yeah.
Alright, I guess next question is from Thomas. First question is relatively straightforward, the other not so much, but the thing is, the first question has already kind of been answered for us. Like the two of you, I'm a big fan of Bartolomeo. I feel like it's been mentioned that he had a crew of his own, but they haven't appeared yet. Well, yes, they have now. Do you think they rein in his Luffy worship, or are they basically a floating Straw Hat fan club? Well, it turns out that
you got it right on the ladder, buddy.
Which do you feel will be more entertaining? I think that if they had reined in his behavior, that it would have ruined the Straw Hats reining in his behavior. It would have been a bit redundant. So, there you go. Second part question, what are the qualities that you look for in a good, memorable villain in terms of power, actions, or ideologies? Which bad guys stand out to you as the best of the worst? Well, currently, the best villain of 2015 in manga is Izami, who is a totally normal person who just happens to be an idealistic asshole. So, there is no secret formula to it, though. It really just depends on what kind of effect they have on the series around them and how they fit into it. And as with anything, it's subjective. I may love certain things about a character that you may hate. But what I find to be great about a villain is, if they just have a really heavy influence on the series, everything should really kind of revolve around their actions rather than the heroes. Johan's a great example of that. Everything revolves around him, even if he is not ever present in the series, his influence is. And, also, I feel like in order to be interesting, you have to understand them in some way. You have to understand the way that they tick. That doesn't mean you should make them sympathetic necessarily. And in fact, that can ruin a character if done improperly. But you should sort of be able to understand where they're coming from and why they think the way they do. Or at least understand how they think.
Very true. I won't go too much into this because I'm actually putting like the initial groundwork in on a top 10 manga villains list for a bonus pod at some point. So I'll save a lot of my kind of ongoing thoughts for that. But I will note one of the most important things I feel a villain has to have. A villain needs to be an antagonist to the hero. And in that way, they increase the value of the hero in some way. You know, they enrich something in the hero. They bring out something in the hero. You know, people always point out the Joker is a great villain. The Joker's not a great villain if he doesn't have Batman to be his opposition. So I feel a good villain at their best is what brings out the best parts and makes you want to root for the hero.
Okay, man.
Yeah. All right. Next question?
Yes.
All right. This is from Oliver Elise, which he notes because apparently I screwed up his name.
Elise.
Yes.
L-E-S.
All right, there you go. I screwed up your name twice then, good sir.
It says it right there.
I think I was reading it as lease, and then I just added another
L. Oh, there's a hyphen there in his pronunciation guide.
I don't have time for it. All these hyphens and silliness. He says, I was wondering whether you two have any favorite genres of manga, like sci-fi or whatever.
Well, I consider sci-fi more of a setting than a genre, because you have a lot of things can be sci-fi. It just has to be, you know, science fiction. And they can be, like, romance, it can be comedy, it can be action, and so on and so forth from there. We read a lot of battle manga, obviously.
Yes.
It can be good or bad, but I think that the amount that we read, I guess, indicates that it's one of our favorites. And also, I really like sports manga. I just do. I like dramatic sports stories, and so that's about it. And I honestly don't know if I have any other favorites aside from that, because I read so much now that I, like, individuals stand out as favorites, but, like, the whole categories and such, I don't know if I have a favorite beyond those two.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. And yeah, you said it's, you know, like sci-fi, I guess, would be more of a setting. And if you were to say favorite settings, I kind of like ones that are set in a state that's relatively modern, but, you know, usually has some kind of fantasy or sci-fi element to it, like World Trigger or, like, the early parts of Bleach, something like that. I always like it when it's, like, a modern world, but a twist to it, kind of.
I actually find that I don't really like cyberpunk-style stuff. I don't know. It's always just like, oh, look at the setting and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, whatever, your story's crap. And too many... I guess it's one of those things where it's like, well, there's so many craps, you know, cyberpunk series, so I automatically get turned off by them. People are going to be like, oh, Ghost in the Shell. I haven't read / watched it, so whatever. I'm not going to pass judgment on that or anything. I'm just saying there are too many bad copycats of the good ones that may or may not exist. There you go.
Nick puts his foot down about
cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk. Yeah.
Taking a stand against whatever.
Last month, he hated dogs. This month, cyberpunk.
Right. Next question from Mike. You've dealt with your fair share of broken characters before in the past, such as Mayuri from Bleach and Urza from Fairy Tail. If you could get all the broken characters from your regular series, or past if you want, put them into a room and ask them to fight, who would win?
Alright.
Why don't you go first on this?
So first thing we need to do is we need to establish who's in that room. He already brought up Urza from Fairy Tail and Mayuri from Bleach, and let's say we're just keeping this.
Let's do the most broken character from each of our regular series.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Let's keep it to like one per series. So
I don't.
I don't think anyone really counts for One Piece. The closest I'd say maybe like Kizaru or Ikano, one of like the Logia users. Even then, they're not.
There's a really rock, paper, scissors type of thing that goes on in One Piece.
Yeah. And either you basically put in the logic of like, well, any Logia user could just turn themselves into their element and, you know, you presume none of the other series characters have any way to counter that, or they can counter it, and it's like, well, then that guy's not actually all that special. So, I don't think anyone really applies there. Naruto?
Sasuke.
I was like, it would maybe be Kaguya, but she's not all that broken because she doesn't actually send anyone to the acid dimension she should be.
So, she's too stupid to be broken.
Yeah, get her out of there. Toriko, I guess it'd be Midoriya, though I know he's broken. I just can't remember what he does. Something about, like, cells that...
It's his
negative probability. Was it Ichiruya, then, who had the... Someone had, like, a negative probability power?
Ichiruya was like, he had his gravity and bullshit stuff, yes.
So, yeah, one of the two of them, throw them in there. What else am I missing on that? World Trigger is not really, I guess, Jin. But
it would have to be Jin. He's the most broken character in that series.
But it's even just, then, it doesn't help him really much in this, because he's going up against broken characters in a whole different series.
Let me use my future sight. I'm going to die.
Oh, no. Asked to be in there, but again, this is a situation where he's only broken in his world, so...
Right. I negate your magic. I don't use magic.
Yeah, none of us here use magic, except Urza, but I...
Yeah, you can take out Urza. He beat Urza. There you go.
And I guess that's really it. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else we really miss on that.
I don't know if we have any past... Well, what about My Hero Academia? Is there...
I guess All Might? All Might, yeah. I guess,
Yeah, he's the strongest. If not him, then Endeavor.
Yeah, I'll go with that. When I first thought of this, though, my immediate reaction came down to two characters. It's between Urza and Mayuri. And my immediate thought was Mayuri, because I'm like, well, that dude's... His brokenness is so specific that I feel like it would counteract everything. Because the way I look at Mayuri, though, is he's like a very complicated combo deck in a card game. I don't know any Yu-Gi-Oh! Examples to share with you, but... Like, for those of you who play Hearthstone, he's like a Grim Patron, you know? He needs, like, 6 or 7 cards to really get the combo, but once he has it, you're fucked. You're just completely hosed. You're boned completely, and I feel like that would be a good counter to basically anybody. Like, he's just gonna have
those... I'll use a classic example for Yu-Gi-Oh! He is Royal Magical Library, Gearfried the Iron Knight, and Butterfly Dagger Alma, which basically, through a combination of those three cards, you can draw your entire deck.
Yeah,
one turn.
He's like that. He's just completely ridiculous. And I was like,
to do another class. By the way, none of these work anymore because whenever something super broken happens in Yu-Gi-Oh, they ban one of the pieces. He is Sangan plus Chaos Emperor Dragon Envoy at the end plus Yatagarasu, which lets you wipe out everyone's hands and the field, and then prevent your opponent from drawing cards until you win.
And that's not what I thought. I was like, well, you just can't really beat that. Until I was like, oh wait, no, because Urza's a face hunter. She's the deck that takes no skill, and every turn you just throw all your monsters down, and you click the button that does 2 damage to face, and that's the counter to those decks. That's that notion that she's just so direct damage to it, I feel like Mayuri wouldn't have a counter to it. Like, he's just like, I'm so used to fighting people who have all of these different spells and counter abilities and all that, and all you do is slashing with swords and friendship. I have nothing to counter this with. So I feel like, in the end, Urza might come out ahead in this. Unless Asta is in there, counters her immediately, in which case Mayuri eventually takes it. Because no one else can stop him.
I believe among those characters, Sasuke would win, because he would always win. He would have some bullshit eye power to get him out of it. But, if we're not limiting it to those characters, Etchizen wins. Because Etchizen always wins.
He's the John Cena of manga?
He's the John Cena of tennis. It doesn't matter that they won't be playing tennis. He would beat them at tennis because he's fucking Etchison, and he beat Jesus.
Did he?
He beat Jesus.
Good lord.
He beat a guy this was the guy's first appearance in the manga in a match. And it was the finale of the first series before they went to New Prince of Tennis. And his nickname, his title, was literally the Son of God. And Etchison beat him.
Oh, wow. That seems uncalled for. Things
Etchison has done include vaulting off of the umpire's high-rise chair in order to hit a really high smash, which is illegal, by the way. using the ropes on either side of the net to cut the ball in half so that his opponent would have to defend against two halves of the ball at once, even though doing so would actually cause him to lose the point. Having that returned because said Jesus opponent simultaneously hit both halves back towards him, which, again, he hit both halves the ball twice, even if he did hit simultaneously, so doing that would have caused him to lose the points. And then the balls came together perfectly for him to return it in order to then win. Yeah. Prince of Tennis is stupid. It matches and is broken. So he would have won.
I can't even comprehend the logic of two tennis ball slices being hit back and somehow they just
magically come together. Why would you, if you have the ability to simultaneously return them, why would you return them to the same spot?
Yeah, why wouldn't you immediately be like, no, that's on the other side, that's on the other side. Fuck you. Unless you've got some Mario Tennis, like, giant Bowser racket bullshit coming in, you're fucked.
Okay. Next question.
This is from MJP. Two questions here. First, do you ever feel like the Q&A are going to explode concerning the amount of people who are now going to be asking you questions? I mean, the last one had about 10 to 15 questions, and that was an hour. What are you going to do when it turns out you have 30 to 50 questions to go through?
Not read all of them.
As it is right now, we read through basically every question we get, and if the choice was between having too many to get through and not enough, I'll always take the former, you know, just so we have something to talk about on it. As it is right now, it's not the worst thing. This question was from the end of August, so, you know, hopefully we'll get through August, and then deep into September, we'll just slowly make the progress. So that's sort of my thoughts on the matter of getting through it. I'd rather us get more questions than we need and not have enough questions, and then it's just us awkwardly being like, hey, Derek, how about, have you seen Gravity Falls' most recent episode? And he's like, I told you at the beginning of the podcast, no, I'm halfway through the first season. I'm like, oh, well, let me interact some scenes for you so it's like you've seen it. So, I know they're going to explode a little bit, but I'm glad we get questions, and I encourage everybody to keep sending in questions. Again, I'd rather us have more questions than we need than not enough. So if you ever feel like, I shouldn't send this in because they probably get too many questions anyway, don't feel that way, send in your question. Just note, maybe it's one we've already answered before or something like that. You know, there are extenuating circumstances where maybe we wouldn't answer a question, but they're few and far between. So, there you go. Second question he has is regarding the series Magico. I just finished reading an old manga that I'd forgotten about by the name of Magico. The manga saddened me at the end, as it was clear that the series was prematurely ended. The main plot about a character breaking a curse through small rituals lending itself to a premise that allows for a lot of interesting concepts and character interactions. If the series seemed to slightly jump towards what was probably meant to be the big bad guy midway into an arc, not giving us much more than a previous hint to that character's coming, what I'm getting at is, what do you find sadder in the manga world? A series that has potential getting canceled early before it has a chance to really take off, or a series that has built a world, characters, potential plot lines and characters, and even more things to come, only to suddenly rush towards an ending due to waning popularity?
It's a very interesting question, because, yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those things that's like, would you prefer something be taken away from you right when, you know, it's about to get to have the satisfactory conclusion, or would you have it be taken away from you before it has any chance to shine at all? First of all, I don't like Magico, I'm sorry to say. I freaking hated it. But I think that I would prefer the option of it seeming to build towards a conclusion than having to finish up very quickly. It would probably leave a very bad taste, but at least then it would have a chance to shine and show its potential and so on and so forth. The more of a good manga you can get, the better.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, would you rather, you know, better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. I'd rather have seen the manga and be kind of bummed it ended before I really got the cool stuff out of it than seeing, like, oh, it looked like it was kind of getting better, but then it got canceled, so whatever.
I prefer the way that Cross Manage got canceled to the way that Barrage got canceled, for example.
Yeah.
Because at least then it's like, oh, you know, I got, you know, 45 chapters to, you know these characters and see some of the cool action stuff, as opposed to, well, that arc's over, and so is the whole plot, because I guess that guy was just the final villain.
Yeah. Better than Tagami Gahara, which is like, hey, let's and this
arc. This is what we were going to do.
And then it's like, all right, well, in this meantime, by the way, these guys got super stronger, and this big villain showed up, and it turns out the love interest character also had a special Tamagahara, and she was super powerful, and anyway, they beat him, and they won, and there were a bunch of zombies, but...
I had plans!
I had a lot of big ambitions for this, but I don't get to do it, so goodbye.
Well, your series is terrible anyway. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right, here's a question.
Next question from Derek.
This is, I believe, our female consultant.
Oh, okay.
Nick? I feel like he was, like, deeply contemplating, but I think he may have just dropped instead. Nick? Question mark? He's definitely gone. I don't know what happened there.
I'm sorry about that. Oh. I dropped again.
Oh, never mind. He's here, everybody.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. Hey, the question from Derek. Our female consultant, you say?
Yes, I believe right. So.
This is actually a very sensitive question, actually, because we've been bothered about this before. This is a question about Bleach. Do you remember when Yumi Chika said that Giselle Joel is a man? What are your thoughts on Giselle's gender? Do you think it's possible that Giselle's a transgender woman? Do you think we'll ever find out in the manga since Giselle's apparently dead now? Did Kubo forget about her? Well, I guess that was before... That must have been before Giselle was actually shown to have been killed off by Jugo. That must have been when the question arrived.
This was end of August. I feel like... End of August, I feel like we were still, like, at the start of Mayuri's fight with Pernita, so I feel like we would have seen it by that point.
I don't know. I think it doesn't matter. I'm pretty sure Giselle is dead.
Yeah, but Giselle's dead at this point. I think they've established that if you weren't... Basically, any of the characters who aren't part of... Yuubok's elite guard, they're all dead at this point. I think the only people you could question maybe those people who came up to attack, but even then I think you've pretty much established all of them were dead.
Yeah.
I guess Giselle was among that group, so maybe that's what she's asking.
Well, Giselle and Lototo went to attack Jugo, and he killed them, so.
But I guess we never actually saw if they were dead or if they just got shot really bad.
They're probably dead, yeah, considering probably how dead. Their arc's gone, you know.
Yeah.
Like Unohana. It's been confirmed that Giselle is biologically male. How Giselle interprets his gender is a little tricky because all we really know is that when Yumi Chika said, you're a guy, he/she got pissed off. This could mean a number of different things. Most likely it is that she identifies as being a woman. But we don't know for sure because we didn't get to know her very closely. And I think that it wasn't necessarily Kubo, like, trying to make, you know, like, oh, definitely is a transgender. It's just that she's kind of weird, you know. It was an added layer of she's kind of crazy, I think. And, I think that's really it. I don't know for certain. I think it is definitely possible that Giselle was transgender and identified as being a woman despite being biologically male. That's all I have to say about that. I don't know for certain.
You pretty much hit on it. That we're at a point right now where transgender individuals are starting to capture more of a spotlight. New stories are starting to come out about them. We're starting to see more people come out of it. So in that regard, it's one of the issues being highlighted. In fact, there's not a tremendous amount of transgender character representation in media. So I can see kind of looking at a character like this and being like, well, the base points of there are for this character to be transgender, because it is a character who's seemingly born biologically male, who identifies herself as a woman, you know, dresses as a woman, hangs out with other women, and was not very happy when she was inferred to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
But like you, I don't think I can consider it a trans... I don't think Kubo intended for it to be a transgender character. He said... The Quincy's are weird. By and large, the group have a lot of very crazy and weird people in them. You know, not even including Pernitas and, you know, a brain in a jar. There's just a lot of weird people in their group. You know, Pepe is a big floating fat baby man who shoots love beams at people. Naja Coop has checkered board teeth and weird poofy hair bits. You know, Asnot walks around with spikes on his face and screams about fear every so often. There's just a lot of weird people within the Vandenreich, and I feel like that was, as you said, it was an aspect that Giselle received that just made her seem weird. Because if I recall, the scene where it's revealed also is the scene where we find out Giselle has made Bambietta kind of like her zombie pet, and there's like a not heavily implied, but like a weird sexual-esque undertone to it.
Right.
That is kind of uncomfortable. I almost need to see the scene again. I just remember being uncomfortable. And I feel like that kind of just plays into exactly what Kubo's point of this character was. Like, it's just supposed to be like this weirdly sexual, creepy kind of character with zombie-esque powers. So, I think, in a way, it is... I wish it was more of a character that could be like, hey, like, it's this character or villain in the army, transgender, you know, cool little note to leave it on, but I feel like it's not really what Kubo is going for in that regard. Then the only real aspect of that character that highlights any kind of transgender rights was almost kind of played off for a weird bullet point joke sort of thing. So
It's a hard thing to answer, especially because, you know, in the whole thing with, you know, with transgender people, but also gays and lesbians and so on, you know, just the general LGBT thing. It's, you know, people like to label stuff in a way that they can understand it. You know, it's like, oh, you are either straight or gay or bisexual. Well, what if, you know, you are mostly straight, but, you know, you are open to experimentation with, you know, others of your gender and so on and so forth? Or what if you're mostly homosexual and, but you are known to have partners of the opposite gender? You know, where are you on that sliding scale as opposed to you're one of these three and then I can neatly categorize you into one of my boxes so I can understand it and stuff like that. And I don't know how Kubo's mind works between those two viewpoints in terms of if he understands the way that LGBT people think or he doesn't. And because I'm not him. I don't know how his mind works. I don't know what the author's intention was, and that's the only thing that you can really use to understand what the character's gender thoughts were.
And I guess, though, you know, it's also a part of the audience. You can choose to put that interpretation on Giselle's if you want. I mean, if you want, you're like, I like Giselle, thought she was pretty cool, and you want to be like, hey, it's a trans character being represented, then by all means, you know, have at it.
Very good point. Very good point by Tropical Blitz in the group. It's the strangest white supremacist Nazi-based group ever.
Yeah, he's a Mexican wrestler, a brain in a jar, two black characters.
Very diverse racial supremacist group.
A fucking Norwegian Thor. It's great.
Yeah.
My question then?
Oh, yes.
This is from Satellite of Love. He says, dear Chris and Nick, are either of you two currently reading any American comics? If so, are there any particular titles you enjoy in particular at one point or another?
I don't read too many American comics currently. When I was a kid, I read Spider-Man comics all the time, which I touched on in our Spider-Man manga episode, in which I went insane. I got better. But the only thing that I really read right now is the Secret Six book, and that's just because before DC did its huge relaunch, I read it regularly, and I really liked it. I think that, because it's only had like 4 or 5 volumes come out so far, it's coming out very slowly, so I haven't formed a full conclusion on it yet, but that's what I read.
I don't read many comics. It's something I've always kind of wanted to get into because I love, like, the other Marvel properties. Like, I always like the TV shows. I'm a huge fan of the mangas, the movies. But I just haven't been able to really get into the comics too much. And basically, every problem I've had with comics is something I've experienced again, like, in actuality. Like, I read the Ed Brubaker run of Winter Soldier before the movie came out, because I heard, like, Ed Brubaker really redefined Captain America and brought him into the modern age. I was like, oh, this is enjoyable. I don't get the fucking beginning where a bunch of super soldier-esque characters have been killed because I don't know any of the, you know, 50-plus year lore of Captain America and understand who these people are and, you know, small little bits like that. One series I did enjoy, I bought the first 4 issues of Matt Fraction's Hawkeye series because I'd heard a lot of really good things about that. And it was legitimately very good, but I bought them when they were on sale for $1 an issue, and I do not think I could ever buy a single issue of a comic if it were more than 99 cents. And even then, I still feel that's a little too much because an issue of a comic is gone. I've digested it and enjoyed it within 15 minutes. And paying $3+, $5 sometimes for them, it's just not worth it for me. So I don't keep up with comics in that regard. And especially once I stopped doing, we're not doing the MCU podcast regularly. You know, that's where I was kind of reading, like, the Guardians run and She-Hulk from 2004. Without those, it's really no motivation for me to read comics as much. I do enjoy comics in principle, it's just I can't get into them. He also notes, if you guys are going to get into reviewing manga or anime movies, would you consider reviewing the Attack on Titan live-action movie?
Yeah, we might do a stream on it.
Yeah. We would consider it, yes.
Next up, question from Milo. I've heard a lot of people say that they enjoy manga more when marathoning chapters than reading it weekly. But what about vice versa? Are there any series you followed that you enjoyed more reading week to week than in collected volumes and or in concentrated bursts? I like doing Fairy Tail week to week more than I did catching up with it, because it's easier to digest the insanity and stupidity of it. It's a lot more fun to do it a little bit at a time. In a more positive note, I feel like Food Wars has been a lot better since we started doing it weekly, as opposed to when I was, you know, catching up on it, reading it in long marathons and bursts and stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe it's just a matter of the series has just been better since then.
It's also the fact that because each individual chapter is so good and doesn't necessarily leave you at a point like, I have to find out what happens next, maybe it's that point where just like it's like this really good, enjoyable treat you get each week, and it satisfies you enough that you're like, ah, it's like I get something awesome next week too. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe you wouldn't have any time to come down and then reach that high again if you're reading it every, you know, each chapter in a row.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree with you though on Fairy Tail and put Bleach in that same category where it's like week
really?
To week. Yeah, I think like week to week I'm able to enjoy what this is. You know, even if it's bad or anything like that, I can still be like, yeah, this is, you know, it's fun to at least talk about it and be goofy about it. But if I were to read an entire volume of Bleach, it would drag. I feel like it's better in a week to week where I can, you know, we can enjoy it for what it is, and then I can step away, talk about something else, and I don't have to, you know, see it again for another week, and then I can be like, now it's all over again. I can enjoy this scenario renewed once more. So.
See, I have the opposite interpretation of Bleach, because so little fucking shit happens in that series that it seems like the only way you can possibly read is if you read several volumes at a time, and then maybe it'll last you an hour.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, if you bought a volume of it, you might still be angry. Like, you're like, wait, I paid $6 for this, and you got nowhere in this! You're still fighting Perdidas!
God damn it. Aizen fight lasted half a year. Second question. Often, as a manga continues, the art style will evolve and change. One example of this is the way Akira Toriyama changed the designs as Dragon Ball went on. Are there any changes in art style in a manga series that you feel strongly about, be it in a positive or negative way? I feel that the art in Aisha 21 got a lot sharper and better as time went on. If you look back at, like, really early, like, designs, like, especially Hiruma, looks so normal. And then he turned into this really angular, sharply designed character. Let's see. Bleach, I think, has actually gotten worse, though. I much prefer the way it was when Kubo's art actually wasn't as good, because he wasn't just like, ooh, look at the giant two-page spreads. That's more the methodology than the style than the actual quality of the artwork, though.
I also just like aesthetically the way Bleach looked in its early volumes more than it is now. I guess because it was more stylized and less kind of quasi-realistic. I kind of enjoyed the fact that it seemed different then because of it. It almost had kind of like an urban kind of like...
Street art.
Yeah, kind of like a street art kind of vibe to it that I really enjoyed. Whereas now it's a lot more realistic, a lot more grim, kind of stuff you'd see in other manga, though. I still think Kubo's a very good artist.
It looks much more typical of shonen manga now, doesn't it?
Yeah. JoJo Akira is... Not Akira... I've forgotten his name for some reason. Akari? I'm blanking on it. He, though, has transformed his series from beginning to end. There's an actual image out there online that basically shows how his art style was at the beginning and then the end of each part throughout time. And it's absurd to see what the series looked like at its start to what it was at the end of it, where everything has become hyper-realistic, so much attention put into it. Like, I love that his art style has evolved, but it's also... Araki, that's it, sorry. But in the same kind of, like, give and take, I also enjoy less that he's put so much time into his art that he also then shows it off in these giant, you know, two-page spreads or giant page spreads that really don't do anything to service the plot other than to be like, look, I drew this really awesome thing. And I'm like, that is great. I didn't really need to see Gyro Zappelli staring off into the distance, though. It doesn't really enhance the story or progress anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Akira Toriyama, no, Araki, guys. But Oda's also another one. Oda's style has definitely evolved and gotten very good with time, though I feel like in recent years it's been less memorable.
Yeah, I can't recall.
I can't recall a character he's introduced in recent memory that I feel like has been like, oh my god, from day one, I thought this character was amazing. Maybe Bartolomeo, but outside of that, I feel like...
Oh, Bartolomeo's... I mean, he's got a memorable design, but when you first looked at him, he didn't really jump out at you. It wasn't until he revealed himself to be this massive Luffy fanboy that became really memorable.
Yeah. I think those would be the ones to go with, though.
Okay. Next question is all for you.
Yes, this is from Colm. He says, a question for Royalty. I was wondering what you use to record the Let's Plays you play on your stream. I enjoyed Tomb Raider and enjoyed watching Valkyria Chronicles enough to buy it myself. Well, I'm glad you did so. I hope you enjoy it. I record my Let's Plays. I stream everything and record everything via OBS, which you can get. It's a free program. I highly recommend it. And I guess just on the topic of Let's Plays, if you guys are curious, I stream games more regularly now over to hitbox.tv/royalty, and there's some recordings on there. I've been doing a playthrough of Life is Strange, and I've been doing games of Left 4 Dead 2 and FTL and Skullgirls, where I just have friends on. Nick's been joining us for some of them, and hopefully we'll get in for some more Left 4 Dead 2 together. So if you're curious, you can find out stuff there. Yeah. But OBS, guys. Very great program.
It is awesome, and it is free.
Yes.
Next question from Corey. What are Tite Kubo's strengths as a writer? I know you could go on about his obvious weaknesses when it comes to writing, such as not letting us see characters developed, or having them developed off-screen and out of nowhere, or having a huge cast and doing nothing with them for the most part, and tossing the core main cast aside to look at characters for the most part we don't care about. Strength as a writer.
I feel, and maybe I'll get punched for this, but I do feel like Kubo... on a surface level, and maybe deeper than that, though it's just not been executed right, is particularly good at teases. He doesn't pay off on many of them, but I do feel like he is effective at teasing us with things that make me excited for what's going to happen in the future, or giving like a cool kind of like cliffhanger tease of what's going to happen next. Like, it wouldn't be, like, if I didn't care at all about the teases or anything like that, then Chad's constant do-nothing wouldn't mean anything to me, but I do feel like he's good at playing into the idea that there's foreshadowing going on or something like that. Just doesn't deliver on it necessarily.
I don't know if there's ever been anything that Kubo's consistently good on. I mean, I can think of some things where it was like he got it right once, and then he didn't get it right in future chances he had to repeat it. So, yeah. I mean, like, you know, just think of some of the stuff that he's done. Like, you know, what was the big thing that people remember about the story of Bleach that really stands out to them? It's like, oh, this was the really cool thing. What do you think? What do you think?
I think the first one you'd get would be the Aizen twist.
Exactly. And then the second time he tried to do the Aizen twist was with Ginjo. And the twist was fucking stupid. So, I don't think that he has anything that he is consistently good at. I think that he has his ups and downs, and that's about it. I mean, like, you know, even like in terms of like the way he uses his characters and stuff, like there are characters that go through kind of, you know, droughts basically. Like Ichigo was this really cool character at certain points, and then at others he was really pathetic and whiny and had no idea what to do and so on and so forth. And they just go up and down. And he assumes that, you know, people think of the way he writes as being a consistent thing, but it's not. Like, you know, look at some of the stuff that we've seen, you know, like with the way Ichigo's treated and stuff like that. You know, where like characters will have those introspective moments of like, oh, Ichigo, you've changed. And it's like, no, he hasn't. What are you talking about? Or, oh, Ichigo, you sure are the same. No, he's not. What are you talking about? It's like always wrong, whatever your example he uses.
Yeah, no, I see you on that. He isn't particularly consistently skilled in any one thing, but I kind of wanted to pay him a little bit of a compliment. Like, it's like, it can't be that big of an asshole.
You're not the one who has done, like, a 30-minute rant video about him, so there you go.
Yeah.
Second question.
But I defer to your opinion on
that. The second question is related to this. If Taikubo were to do a spin-off series or a brand new series that highlighted strength as a writer, would you bother to read it?
Well, from what we...
From what I've said, he has no strength as a writer.
And from my version, it's just a series of fucking teases that don't really get payoff because he's not good at the payoff.
Every single chapter ends in a cliffhanger that is not addressed in the next chapter. It just goes to a new cast.
That would almost be an ingenious series. Every week, the plot, the setting, the characters, everything changes. It just ends in a big tease as to what's going to happen next.
Having, you know, the writer of X be the author of a new series is a good way as any to say, to give people an incentive to check it out. I'm sure that Jump would probably run it at some point, and I would be like, okay, I guess I'll read it. And then, within a few chapters, I would probably jump to a decision because I'm familiar enough with Kubo's work to decide whether or not it's worth giving a shit about it. So there you go.
And a nice thing about if that happened is if it sucks, it'll actually lead Jump as opposed to just being like grandfathered in at this point. with apparently nobody holding a fire to Kubo's butt like, alright, this is really ranking low. Why don't you finish this up? And he's like,
I said this was the final arc.
How about three more years? I'm like, God damn it. My turn?
Yes.
Alright, this is from Ginger Straw Hat. Has a couple questions for us. Chris, have you seen the JoJo anime yet? What are your thoughts? No.
Okay.
Nick?
I watched the scene where they encountered the gambler that you told me about.
How'd you enjoy it?
It's really cool.
Do you get where I'm going from now? Or you're like, God, it's...
I love the whole build-up leading to it where, you know, his dad's like, it's okay, guys, I got this. And he's like, oh, no!
Got hosed again!
No spoilers, by the way. You should just watch the whole scene in full or read the whole scene in full. It's really cool.
Yes.
Second question.
Nick, have you ever had any interest in trying to read JoJo's Bizarre Adventure? It seems like a series you would enjoy.
It's okay. It's okay. We'll do it eventually. It'll just take me a long time to finally get around to it, I think.
Well, I guess maybe I'll ask a question within that. Would you be more or less opposed to doing it in parts? Like if you're like manga recommendation, JoJo, Bizarre Adventure, but just Phantom Blood, just part one?
I think that would be interesting. We'd have to be like a recurring thing to do, like every couple of months or so. It's like, oh, now we're going to do a new JoJo part.
Like the year of JoJo and every couple of months.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that in 2016, why don't we?
Yeah, boom. Maybe the decision may have just been made for the future of the podcast right now.
Well, no guarantees on that. Yeah, we haven't signed any documents.
And third question. Chris, I remember back in the earlier WMRs, you were very hard on Robin from One Piece and voiced your dislike of her. Have your feelings changed on her? And if not, why are you so hard on her? I think I mentioned why. I was hard on her early on, and I've definitely lightened significantly since then. My feelings for her were basically just like pent-up holdover aggressions from the fact that I used to know somebody who was a ridiculous Robin fanboy.
Oh, really?
He just irritated the shit out of me. It was the kind of person you could tell only really liked her because he, like, she was basically his waifu. Like, mm-hmm. That kind of person. So, he just talked about how much he fucking loved her so much and how she was the best Straw Hat and all that shit. I just got so annoyed with them that I just started to hate shit out of Robin for it. So that aggression just stayed with me as I just followed Robin along. And eventually that just doesn't impact me anymore. Now I'm able to kind of like put that bias aside and look at Robin objectively. And I'm like, okay, she's not a bad character. I can see where her strengths are. She's maybe not going to be my favorite Straw Hat at all, if only because she just doesn't have, like, I enjoy the wackiness of the crew, or at least like having a straight man who will react to things. Mm-hmm. So, but I still enjoy Robin's moments when she gets them. I wish she would get more. So, no, I'm not as hard on her as I used to be. I enjoy Robin just fine nowadays.
I enjoy her more as the straight man than as the one who just kind of goes, tee-hee, everyone's so energetic. He's like...
I wish you would be.
You're acting girly all of a sudden. Come on.
I still do, though, remember, like, there was a point where I guess we just haven't really gotten enough of Robin's character, but there was a point, I think it was when they met Duval, the guy who looked like Sanji.
Uh-huh.
And everyone was, like, reacting to what he, like, looked like. And maybe it was just a translation thing at the time. I haven't read the official Viz translation. But at the time, Robin's line was, I bet he'll die a spectacular death.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? where did this character trait come from? When did she become this morbid gothic?
And apparently then she's just, like, you know, perpetually cheery about stuff.
It's so strange.
I would appreciate a little bit more consistency with her character. You know, you gotta get, you can, like, you know, names of the other Straw Hats, and you, like, know what they're like. You know, like, mm-hmm. Frankie is basically a giant dork. Like, literally giant dork.
Yeah.
Usopp, he's a big coward, but he also has a bit of an ego on him, and he, you know, will stick with his friends, and so on and so forth. Robin is just like, well, she's had this traumatic past, and she was really appreciative of her crew. And sometimes she has a morbid sense of humor, and sometimes she's perpetually happy about stuff and is, you know, really glad to be hanging out with her crew. And other times she's a tremendous killjoy, and she won't participate in forming the giant robot with everybody. Which, honestly, is probably my favorite moment of
her. It is her best. She's like, no, I would die.
It's too embarrassing. And everyone's just like, no, come on, Robin.
We were so close.
The fucking horse is like, oh, how dare you not form the robot? Oh, that's such a great moment. Anyway, yeah, there you go. Next, what's this guy? Is that, what is this guy's, I feel like I should know his screen name.
It's Dr. Nova is what he goes by. Jonah Bacon Lefkowitz. He's one of the moderators on the one ODAR forum.
And he refers to you as ODAR admin. And yes. He is the Prince of Hating Prince of Tennis, which I think is great. First of all, thank you for answering a few of my questions earlier. Since you guys asked for more, I have a brand new one I think you'll enjoy. Are there any characters in the manga you read that you would like to see interact that haven't, either because you think they would work well together, because you think the results would be entertaining? For example, I would like to see, in World Trigger, Nasu interact with Kagura, because I think their personalities would work off each other well. Also, I don't know why, but I think I would like seeing Law interact with Vivi. I don't think about those things, honestly.
This is weird. I'm almost getting, like, flashbacks. This is, like, a rambly kind of anecdote that doesn't really connect to the story, but...
All right, great.
I'm going to tell you anyway, because I started. Back in the day, my mom used to watch the living crap out of L.A. Confidential. It was her favorite movie. I think she saw it in theaters probably, like, 13 times. My brother and sister were lucky enough that basically my mom would take them to see the movie. Like, you come with me, and I'll let you have off school tomorrow. Like, that was, like,
she's wow.
Yeah, it was great. When Kim Basinger won the Oscar that year, because she was a big Kim Basinger fan, she almost let all of us have off school the next day. My brother just didn't have the balls to make the bet. She's really loved that movie. And I was just too young to ever see it. And they'd always, like, because my brother, sister, and mom had seen it so much, they'd play games regarding it. One of the ones they'd do is, like, name two characters who don't have a scene together. So they would talk about, like, two characters who didn't. And I was just always like, oh, that seems so cool. I wish they could do it. Now I get the chance to do it, Nick, and I have no good answers at the ready. I feel like one character I wish would... I feel like I want Buggy to interact with Blackbeard.
Buggy, he has at some point.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm sure Buggy has, considering... Well, no, because Buggy became a warlord as Blackbeard stopped being a warlord.
Oh, you're right, because he became one of the four...
Emperors at that point. Yeah. He left. But I feel like it would be really interesting to see them interact, because Buggy's one of those few kind of like old school pirates. We know he was a member of Gold Roger's crew. It'd be interesting to see how he'd interact with the guy who seems so openly blasphemous towards that generation of people. Someone who clearly holds no respect for them, who killed Whitebeard, who did all this stuff. So just seeing a character like that have a chance to interact, I think it'd be interesting.
Hmm. That's an interesting idea. Like I said, I just don't think about these types of things. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not good at imagining, like, scenarios between existing characters. It's just not something I do. Yeah.
So you want Karina to join the Straw Hats. I got it, Nick.
Oh, sorry. Anyway. Yeah, that's that. So, next question.
Alright, this is from Athos. Says, after all this time reading manga, have you developed any kind of weakness towards... I forgot this question was in here. And have you developed any kind of weakness towards female characters such as archetypes, personalities, or appearance? To put it a different way, if you were playing the visual novel, what heroine route would you play first?
I love that question. I actually have a very good answer for this, because I can say that I don't have a preference, and it really just comes down to the fact that an archetype does not guarantee the character will be good. You can do it well, or you can do it poorly. And so, for example, there are some characters that fit an archetype very well that I do like, and other characters that fit the archetype very well that I don't. For example, I like, you know, I like Hinata. I do. I don't really know why, because, you know, she just gets shit on through the whole series, but I think it's just the fact that, you know, she was very consistent in the fact that, you know, Naruto was her inspiration. He inspired her to be, you know, stand up for what she believed in, so on and so forth. And she did gradually change over the course of things, and she had a very satisfactory, you know, I love you and protected him and so on and so forth, and kind of returned the favor eventually. And then they got married and stuff. It's like, oh, that's a nice, you know, sweet little fairy tale story with her and stuff, even if she didn't get to do a tremendous amount through the rest of the series. That said, that does not mean that I like the, you know, very shy and reserved type of character. For example, my least favorite character in Nisekoi, I think, is Onodera. I just don't like her. She's much less interesting than Marika, or Sugumi, or Chitoge, or Ruri, or, like, any other female character. I would prefer to Onodera. They're just more fun, because she is the default, you know, girl who's just kind of perfect, essentially. So, there you go. Like, you know, my favorite character in that series is Ruri. That does not necessarily mean I like, you know, the tough, not interested in the protagonist, girl, or with glasses and stuff like that. It doesn't mean that I like the Tsundere character, and most of all in every series that I read. I like good characters, not archetypes of characters.
Yeah, I would agree on that. It, you know, the individual counts, but I guess if you're just playing to, like, what one will maybe interest me more, I've always had, like, I guess more recently I found I kind of like, tomboy characters. Any of those kinds of, like, kind of like the, I guess, like, in the same kind of vein like Kitora would be, or something like that. Kind of like the, I guess, the action girl, if you need to apply it to a trope or something like that. I always kind of enjoy those characters. Not necessarily saying there's the waifu option I'll pick if I were to play a visual novel, and I can't ever comprehend actually playing a visual novel. It just feels like it would be so lame to me. But, no, I guess if you want an answer there, I guess that'd be the route I'd take. Whatever's the tomboy character? Question mark?
So when my hero eventually introduces that tomboy character that we're talking about.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm going to be like, Nick, I want all the fan service. Why can't she have a bath battle, Nick?
Well, that defeats the fetish, Chris.
I'm like, no!
Okay. Next question from the Bacon Thief.
Guys... Unrelated to Jonah Bacon Lefkowitz, by the way.
Yes.
I feel like they should be mortal enemies.
I think this is the one that I was thinking of that we.
Oh yes, this it actually is.
Yeah. Do you guys have any plans on covering a manga based on a video game series? Maybe. I don't really want to though. Have you read any before? Do you have any suggestions on ones that you can recommend? I did a video on this a long time ago. I think you can find it somewhere. Someone cross posted on YouTube, and I was like, "Yours has Russian subtitles, so I won't complain about it." But yeah, we have talked about this before. And also, the second question is, have you guys played any video games based on manga or anime titles? So there you go!
Yeah.
Answer that too.
Done and done. Do you want to do the next one since that
go,
one?
Oh, sure. From I. Oren. Chris and Nick, I myself am not a fan of horror, especially in manga. I believe we can all agree that manga is just not the right medium to scare people. We either create tension with sound and movement in film, or by feeding the mind of the reader with just enough information so it does it itself. Do you get what I am saying? Kinda?
Yes, I actually would agree with that. I think the way it's phrased initially that horror is not a great medium for manga isn't true, but I would agree it's not the best medium for it, because I do think horror is more effective if your mind's left to, you know, fill it in what you're looking at, or in a situation where you can do more than just playing with what the visuals are. But I do feel manga has a strength in creating it in that it has a fantastic use of black that you're not going to get in most other mediums, especially in comics that may have color involved in it. Black is a very scary color, you know, it's symbolic of death, the void, a lot of things that are going to be inherently creepy, and there are a lot of scary manga that we have read that have used black very well, and I feel like art style, you know, the style we see in manga a lot can be used very effectively for horror, and we have had good horror manga that I feel like you can point to. So it's not that I feel the medium's bad for horror, but I feel it's horror as a genre is better represented in other art forms, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Also, a follow-up question. What genre do you think is suited the least for manga? You can also rant about the genre you hate the most.
Comedy. I don't think many comedy series work well for manga.
I think it's more a cultural thing, honestly, than
it is cultural, but it's also the... I can't see something that has no progression, that just exists in as short of a format as manga does, like with a chapter, but never ends either, because it's, you know, perpetually just going on for as long as the series is going to work. I'm not saying that comedy doesn't work in manga. Again, it's kind of like the horror thing. I just feel like I don't see a lot of good comedy manga, and I feel like the medium's part of the reason for it.
I got, actually, when you think about it, because, you know, manga has, you know, a very constant rate of, like, time, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, it's an unreliable progression of time. The timing of jokes and such might not work in it. So, yeah, I get that. I think that I see your point, because if you have a manga that is exclusively comedy and that's basically all it can offer you, it can be kind of frustrating.
Yeah,
comic relief can work, of course, but it's nice to have a bit more meat than that.
And it might work better if it's also kind of like, I forget what those... I feel like we've read something, but like those four comma series where...
Yonkoma, where it's
basically short, almost like a collection of comic strips as a chapter, as opposed to being, here's 19 or 32 pages of a comedy series, you know, every so often that you get. I feel like...
There was that one that we did recently, fairly recently, about the mangaka, right?
Yes. I can't remember its name, but yeah, like that. I can enjoy that a little bit more, but I feel like if it was like a straight comedy... Kind of like what Nisekoi is, although Nisekoi I do enjoy at points, but it's just like, eventually I'm just going to get kind of bored of this.
Mm-hmm. Alright, next up.
This is from...
Oh, really? You're going to do fucking hell.
This is from Gemini999. I want to say thanks for putting on an awesome show every week. And I want to ask you a question. With the recent arc in World Trigger and Osamu and Chika being really hard on themselves despite making improvements... and being done in a very realistic way, I've found some characters in manga that I can relate with, something that I've never gotten before with how over-the-top things can be. So I want to ask, what manga characters, either from shonen or otherwise, do you find yourself relating to the most or pretty strongly with, either due to excellent writing or a similar circumstance?
Well, when we did Onani Master Kurosawa, not just the whole masturbating thing.
I'm like, makes it. I relate a lot to I talked
about how much I related to the, you know, heartbreak scene, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, the girl that he had a crush on that he never, you know, managed to confess to, winding up with another guy, basically. Because I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of characters overall, though, I don't really think so. I think that... I find it easier to relate to circumstances than characters as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to Osamu in the sense that I can relate to his moments where it's like, I feel like I need to do more, or, you know, I don't feel like I'm doing enough yet, or something like that, but I don't think I'd be like, well, he just feels like I connect with him on every single level, or something like that. Because there's points where even I'm like, seriously, you gotta nut up at some point, buddy. But yeah, like, individual moments there are definitely ones. I can't remember. It was the romance series with the girl kind of looked like Rukia.
Are you talking about Good Ending?
Good Ending, that was it. There were moments in that I remember being like, even if I've never experienced this exact situation, I'm definitely empathizing with the moment. You know, like, lines like, you know, you're overcomplicating things in this, and this, that's why this is causing you issues in your love life, or things like that. I'm like, yeah, I can, you know, find some sort of, some sort of kind of, I can relate very strongly with this scene, basically, or something like that, but not necessarily any one character do I immediately connect myself with. I may joke Osamu is my spirit animal, but we have differences in certain ways that are vital. Like, he wears glasses all the time, I wear contacts. It's really actually, I guess, it separates us. Also, women talk to him. That's something that separates the two of us very strongly.
Also, he's totally got a girl he's going to end up with.
Yeah, he's going to end up with a woman eventually. I will probably die alone in a dumpster somewhere.
There's also a follow-up question that also has to do with World Trigger.
Yes, during the Evasion arc, they made a big deal about not knowing how people got into how to get people out of the Tron cubes, but I don't recall a solution ever being found. Did I miss something?
I don't know if they ever said they don't know how to do it.
Well, they did say they got turned into a cube. We don't know exactly how to get it back. Because I'm reading the volumes now, and they mentioned something like, this person's been turned into a cube. I think it's him. We can't, undo it. But I think I don't think it was ever made, a big deal. We figured it out. I think it was probably some, throwaway line. Everybody who's been turned into a Tryon cube's been turned back.
Well, I think what you think about it is, they were in a Tryon shell, which is basically what they would do anyway whenever they, went out to the field. Their body had, a Tryon shell around it, and then they were able to bail out and stuff. And actually, I think that whole arc with people transforming into cubes helped to answer a legitimate question of, so what happens if they get cut? Why is their body not cut? Well, the Tryon body basically replaces them. So the Tryon cube basically replaced them. So presumably they use the same technology in order to, reverse the effect of them being cubified.
From the collected volumes, Ashihara touches at one point about how Tryon bodies work. And he notes that Tryon bodies won't feel pain, but they can choose to feel where they've been. They can choose to feel pain of a sensation like it, so that they can know where they've been hit, essentially. But I guess that's something you can also just turn off.
Interesting.
Quite. Right.
Next question comes from Connor. I would like to congratulate you on being the very first subscription fee product that I've ever supported. Your great jokes and mini rants have succeeded where the likes of Xbox Live and World of Warcraft have
failed. Boom! Take that, wow!
Like it. Hypothetical question. You both have the ability to erase your memories of one manga. How much you want to erase is up to you. You could either use it to erase something that scarred you for life, or to enjoy the story for a good manga over and over again without remembering the twists and turns it may take you on. Which manga would you choose? I can tell you that because of the internet, I have come across some guro, which is gore porn.
Oh God!
It's terrible. I wish I could just forget that forever. More than any of oh, I'd love to enjoy that story again, or oh, I hated that manga, or whatever. Just get those images out of my head. That would be bad. That would be great.
Oh, we took this in such a dark place.
Yeah. So, good luck following up on that.
I was I never want to do 20th Century Boys again, because I don't know if it could match the first experience there. And now I'm just people get eaten by monsters
people
all
going
the
to Usagi Drop. People going to Usagi Drop. Nah, there's worse than Usagi Drop out there. I wasn't looking for it. Why would I look for that?
I wouldn't actually, though, say 20th Century Boys for that reason, that it was such a, perfect spiral of time that made that series so memorable that I don't know if it could be recaptured again, just forgetting everything about it. Plus, it was the first Urasawa series I read, so I think having read Monster and still having the memories of, Monster and Pluto might affect my enjoyment of it. Maybe Crossmanage? Just a small series that I really enjoyed that I'd get the chance to read again, but I don't know if I'd enjoy it the same way, since it wouldn't have the, weekly chapter and weekly manga recap that we talk about it to really enjoy it with. So, and I can't think of a series that I hate so much. I wish it was out of my mind forever. Maybe Wolf Guy.
Oh, God.
Yeah. My turn?
Yes.
This is from... Actually, I don't see a name here, with A. Reyes, he says, my question is, in the last couple months, Fairy Tail has been stupid and pointless, almost making me want to drop it for series for good, but never bringing myself to do it. What would make you guys drop the series for good and sort of never pick it up again, like a change of tone or a seriously stupid plot point, disturbing fan service, etc.? Basically, would anything make you drop Fairy Tail at this point?
If it got, angry. If it got, Bleach bad, maybe? I don't know.
I think the only thing that would make me drop Fairy Tail outright is if it continued to push fan service to the point where it stopped even being silly and it just became purely exploited to the point it was basically, a softcore hentai.
That would probably kind of took the Kenichi route where the fan service got more and more gratuitous.
Yeah.
I can do nipple shots now. Look, nipple shots. Yeah. Building damage with every female combatant. And so on.
And it just stopped having even, like, a silliness aspect to it. Like, I mean, Battle of the Nudes, you know, we'll find out how that actually goes, you know, this week. But even that's just the premise is so silly, it's almost kind of funny. But if it was just purely, like, Lucy's going to take a bath this chapter, and we just get a lot of close-ups on her, you know, private parts and shit like that, that would be like, eh, this is... Now I'm not enjoying this for the fun of it. Now this is just really unnerving. But yeah, that'd pretty much be it. I don't think Fairy Cable could do something so stupid I stop reading it at this point. Because I feel like I've gotten over the worst that series could possibly do. Mm-hmm. Garrard, every single R, you know, Lux is being forgiven. Like, I'm like, the series has blown its wad on being god-awful, and I still come back to it, so I'll take it. And second question he has... I heard a rumor that the only reason Lasana's brought back is because the anime producers of Fairy Tail love Lasana so much they asked Hiro to bring her back. What are your thoughts on if this rumor is true?
It makes about as much sense as anything.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a logical reason for bringing her back. Like, oh, hey, turns out Lasana wasn't dead. Otherworld Lasana was dead. And our Lasana replaced her, so we'll just bring our Lasana back.
All right, what you gonna do now? She's gonna dress up like a... Yeah, cat girl bikini?
Yeah. Isn't that what you've been kind of
waiting for? Well, is she gonna fight anyone? Some mooks. Alright, well, she got kidnapped one time. What's gonna happen to her? She's gonna be thrown into a cell naked.
Does she have to escape with her own ingenuity or anything?
No, that's gonna help her.
Oh. Does it lead to any budding relationship between them?
Maybe.
Are you gonna go anywhere with it?
Well, no.
Does she do anything after escaping?
She dresses up like a cat girl in a bikini again.
What does that do?
She's a cat girl in a bikini. Fair. It's kind of like Elfman's power, except that she's not actually going to fight anyone important.
Does Elfman get to do anything?
He's on the B team.
He's the B team alternate. Oh man, I forgot that they made a fucking separate team to go out to the other continent and still didn't do anything.
We're the new B team, guys.
Oh man, I just got reminded how fucking stupid that was.
Look, we found Laxus. He's got a boat that's okay for Dragon Slayers to use.
Hey, we're over here. Oh hey, you just teleported out. Alright, cool. Let's go back home, everybody.
Oh, alright. Next question from Blue Sophia. Two questions. One, what are your favorite handicap fights, as in fights where one character is wounded, missing a weapon, or otherwise not at full strength?
Hmm. Ooh.
I really like the second half of Hokyushu versus Daemon, where Hiruma is quarterbacking without his throwing arm. Oh,
that actually is a good example. I was trying to think of one for this, and you actually came up with a really good one. That is a Kurita on the Straw Hat's little good answer, Nick.
Nice.
It's tough. I can't think of many examples off the top of my head where someone's, like, completely in a handicap. I guess maybe one would be, if you count it, Usopp and Chopper versus Miss Merry Christmas, Mr. Five, and the dog. That's technically a handicap match, 2-on-3. That was really good. Other than that, I guess I think of... and then Crowley versus Jasperdo. They were like two twins initially, and then they combined to one form. And it's a fight he's just completely outclassed for almost the entire way through. I guess that might count for the qualifications of it, but honestly, I can't even think of like a big handicap match that comes to mind, unfortunately.
I guess there are the fights where Zoro doesn't have all of his swords, or even no swords.
Actually, to that point, one that we didn't actually get to see, but I would have loved to have seen more of, is... Zoro versus Kaku and Jayabura while Soge King has been handcuffed to his hand and needs to be functioning as one of his swords. We only got a brief shot of it, but God, I would have loved a full fight with that.
Oh, what if I say? Jeez. Alright, here's what we'll do. One of us will cut off our arms and then we'll find Chopper and reattach.
I fucking love that entire scene.
Second part of the question. What are your favorite fights involving characters who don't fight very often, such as Kaoru and Misao's fight with Kamatari and Rurouni Kenshin? characters who don't fight often. Do Bleach side characters count?
So does a Bleach character that's not Ichigo, Mayuri, or Kenpachi count? That's another tough one. Because
Generally non-combat role characters in combat.
If that's the case, can I count Usopp?
No, he's a sniper. His whole job is combat, technically speaking.
But it's not prolonged combat, because one fight I've always really enjoyed that I feel like doesn't get enough appreciation was Usopp versus Perona.
Funny sequence.
It's such a goofy fight, but like looking back, I was like, that was actually a really good fight between the two of them. There was really up and down to that. I'm trying to think. Non-combat characters who get to fight. It actually feels like that's more rare than you'd expect.
I think Nami fights would be a better example than Usopp. Hell, even Chopper fights, because he's, you know, the doctor, and he's not as a combat-heavy character.
I mean, I did like him versus Gedatsu. I guess that'd be the only really one to point out. I guess all the characters in Naruto are technically supposed to fight.
Right.
I gotta say, I feel like it's some of them, like the side characters and like the Chunin exam, kind of interesting fights, but I guess it doesn't really count. Toriko, not really. To be honest, I can't think of like a good answer for this one per se. And I feel really bad about it.
I can't really think of any either.
I'm going to use her example of Kaoru and Misao versus Kamatari from Rurouni Kenshin.
What about, like, characters in Yu-Gi-Oh! That don't duel very much?
Teya versus Mai Valentine.
Teya, would she use Shining Friendship?
I can't count Yukimitsu, because he eventually does start to fight.
He becomes a regular player, yeah.
He becomes a starter, essentially, by the end of it, so... And he almost counts for so many other things, like so many other questions we can get asked. I feel like he almost like a cheat answer here. I can't think of like a really good answer off the top of my head. Although, I feel like there are JoJo characters that are starting to come to mind. And I'm just not able to think them all the way through. Some early parts of JoJo, like Part 6 and Star Ocean, before Jolene actually kind of nuts up and gets her shit together, she really is like kind of a cowardly character, and I think those ones still had some cool fights within them. So maybe I'll give myself kind of like a cheating note there.
Yeah, I honestly can't think of any good examples, I'm sorry. She's like...
You blew it on that Haruma answer.
Yeah. It's like, oh, there we go. Got my answer.
Yeah, like, nailed it.
One answer per email, motherfuckers.
Question here from Anonymous Cheddar. Says, what do you think of comic relief characters in manga? How do you successfully make one? And where does the border between funny and annoying lie?
Oh, God. Comedy is such a difficult thing.
It's very subjective, too.
It's all subjective. Everyone's going to have their character that they think is annoying, that their best friend who agrees with them on everything else is going to think is the funniest thing ever.
I personally believe a character usually played for laughs is at their best when played for drama after seemingly comedic setup. For me, the best examples of these are Usopp and the Ha Ha Brothers. What other examples of good comic relief characters would you name?
Usopp is a good example. I do like Mineta. I just think that he is funny. Mineta from My Hero Academia.
The afro squiggy head by.
Right, and so far he has not had a serious scene. Like, the most serious was when they had that, like, invasion of the test, and he was just like, oh, I threw my stickies everywhere. Oh, that helped.
Ooh, actually, I'm going to cut this off real quick. Ginger Straw Hat did remind me of a good character for the previous question. Joseph Joestar from Stardust Crusaders, because he's an old man at that point. He doesn't really fight people, and he did have some good battles within that series. So I feel like he should count for that.
Fair enough.
Go carry on this.
I think there is no secret formula to good comedy, like if a character can have serious moments or not. I think that is irrelevant for a effective comic relief character, because you are using them primarily for the purposes of comedy, and it's all just going to be if you find them funny or not.
Yeah, it's all. It also comes just down to the execution. Is the author very good at writing comedy? Are they good at, you know, playing off the jokes?
Mm-hmm.
I guess when it comes to the question of what are our favorite other comic relief characters, I'm trying to think of other series. I don't want to just go with One Piece, because One Piece has almost too many examples. Because almost everyone in that series is a comic relief. Even the characters who are supposed to be the straight man eventually become comic reliefs when their own, like, particular quirks come up.
Don Kanoji is one of my favorite comic relief characters in Bleach.
Don Kanoji is a very good one.
He's great. And he's, again, you know, that is another example of he's got a serious root to him. He wants to be a good person and a hero and stuff like that. But he's such a goofball. So there you go.
Who else? I mean, I showed, I think, like, half that cast also kind of really works as good, like, comic relief characters, because it's, like, so many idiots in that group.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of them also have very good dramatic moments. Like, Monta is a very compelling character, but he's a goofball 80% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Like, even Shen has, like, the joke of just he can't use technology.
He just breaks in his hands.
It's just like, we gave him a GPS to make sure he'd find his way on the mountain. Like, everyone's like, did you think that went through? No, why? It's just like a shot of him in the woods and just the GPS, like, breaking to pieces in his hand. He's like, I guess Sakuraba, I'll just keep running until I find my way out.
Sakuraba said this would help me find my way home. Why isn't it telling me how to get home?
Other really good comedic comedy relief characters. Soma has a lot of them, too. And almost in an unintentional way, Aaron or Alice is starting to become one, just with the Valley Girl accent seeming so out of place now.
She's so energetic about everything. Like, when she was first introduced, she didn't really come across as a comic relief character.
She seemed almost, like, very serious and almost like this, like,
she seemed like she was going to be a rival character for Arina more than Soma.
And, like, a chess master character, too. Like, oh, you don't, like, oh, I'm seeing everything as it's going on. I'm very skilled. And she had, like, almost that...
That dumb. silent minion following her around, and he's also very skilled and stuff.
Like a dominatrix quirk a little bit for her, where she's like, bark for me.
Yeah. And then now she's like, come on, Arina, let's go! The youth today is supposed to run away from home!
Like, oh my god, I'm totally not gonna stay here. That'd be awful. But you should let her stay here.
I couldn't live without a bath.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel like...
I do agree that that series has a lot of different characters with their own comedic quirks and stuff. Yeah.
So I'll go with that, yeah. Oh, and okay. He says, P.S. the woodworkers say hi. So
yes,
you.
I saw that, yeah. All right, next up, question from Brawla. Thank you for your work, you guys are pretty funny, blah, blah, blah. Here's my question, and it's just the one. How far does your... willingness of disbelief extend in manga. For example, I had a fight with my girlfriend about the matter. She dislikes Attack on Titan just because of the 3D gear maneuver, because it wouldn't work in reality. This is a very difficult question, I think, to answer. You know, how far are you willing to extend your disbelief? It depends on the setting, mostly. If you have rules for how a world works, you should work within those rules. And not just the rules you set for the world, but also the tone of the series. Like, for example, if the series is wacky and goofy and slapsticky and stuff like that, I am willing to basically tolerate anything as long as it's played for laughs. If it's supposed to be taken very seriously, then you need to be serious about how you treat your stuff. Like, anyone can use energy blast. Well, then you can use energy blast. But if you're Shamo, and everything is dark and gritty, and then one arc features kung fu magic, and a guy who is dead, but kept alive through the power of his kung fu magic, then it's just like, well, fuck off then. Because the kung fu magic was never used again. That is bad use of, yeah.
Like the fucking, I was thinking of, like, the bike arc that showed up at Count Dooku Hitman Reborn. That, like, was a big thing. Like, we're going to use bikes. And it was like, I guess we won't. We used it once and never again. And we made a pretty huge deal about it. But to the actual question, the suspension of disbelief has different ways of affecting people. Some people will be bothered by things more than others. So, like, your girlfriend, Tabrala, is bothered by the 3D maneuvering. It's something that wouldn't bother me. but I can understand why it might hit her. For example, a good friend of mine, Randy Zulu Tango, some of you might know. Also, by the way, congratulations to him. He just had a baby girl recently. Woo! So, congratulations to him. But he enjoys the Marvel movies, but every time he's like, I hate the Stan Lee cameos, because every time I see them, it pulls me out of the movie. And I'm very cognitively aware I'm not watching the movie, because I'm like, there's Stan Lee on my screen.
Yeah,
and I don't agree with it, but I can absolutely understand that sentiment of, like, just certain things will bother certain people more than others. I think even in her email, she uses the reference of, like, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure eventually has people turning into snails through subliminal messaging. And I'm like, I understand, like, it's such a weird thing, but it actually doesn't pull me out, because JoJo was a series that very slowly transitioned to more and more obtuse powers, to the point where it basically continued to stretch its own boundaries to the point where that actually didn't seem all that unbelievable. I mean, when stands were introduced, they did pretty simple things at the start. JoJo's case, punches really fast, super fast, very precise. And then, you know, one has fire powers, one has, like, a sword, it can move really fast. And then slowly they started to become more and more elaborate, like, this one is a doll, and, you know, just keep playing with the rules it created until it really had a very wide spectrum of things to work with. It's just kind of making sure you don't make that jump between things too jarring. Otherwise, it becomes very evident that it was a jarring jump.
And Brad also names one that bothers her, which is, I've never read the Arrancar arc in Bleach, because I can't stand the concept of the Arrancar. The strongest evolution of Hollows is a human form? Which is interesting, because, yeah, it's like evolution is not supposed to be linear, and yet they all come achieve human forms when they reach a certain threshold of strength.
Yeah. That's it. Want to stop there or do one last one?
Yeah, let's do one more, I think.
Alright.
We've covered more than a month's worth of questions this time, so good job, us.
Yeah, we are essentially almost into October now. This is from Christopher Crow. He asked, I wanted to thank you guys for answering my question in your first monthly Q&A. I enjoy what you guys are doing and all the effort you put into improving the quality and quantity of the entertainment you provide. I want to propose another question to you guys. If you are forced to hang out with a manga character that you hate every day for a month, but you get to choose where you go and what activities you do, who do you choose, what do you do, and why?
I've thought about this answer.
Oh my god, I'm on the tip of my seat waiting for this.
I would hang out with Satellizer, El Bridget. And I would take her to a support group.
Oh my god.
And I would get her to turn in her brother to the police.
Oh my god.
I feel like she could really use the help.
I don't have a way to follow that up. I'm just going to let you end it with that.
Okay. Is that what I got to say?
God, yeah, no, that's it.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. The Q&A episode of Weekly Manga Recap for October 2015. We will be having another Q&A episode next month. Also coming up, we're going to be doing the bonus episode for Weekly Manga Recap, provided only for champion-level supporters on Patreon. Special thanks to all the people who make these bonus episodes of the show possible by supporting the show. And if you want to help out the show, you can go to patreon.com/weeklymangarecap. Check out what awards you can get for supporting us, what kind of goals we're working toward, and so on and so forth. And the bonus episode has a straw poll open still. We think that we know what we're going to be doing for it already, because we're going to be doing live readings of some select chapters that have come out recently over the last couple of months. Chris posted a poll that you can see on the Weekly Manga Recap Twitter, WMR Podcast. And you can vote on the straw poll by scrolling down to it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can still help determine what chapters we're going to cover. We think we know what we're going to do already, though.
Yes. But this is something that if people enjoy this and it's successful, we'll do it again in the future, and then obviously more polls will be brought up to kind of let people pick their favorite chapters for us to bring up.
Also, we're going to be doing a live commentary on a anime/manga movie soon, as that goal was met recently. We don't know what we're going to do yet, do we? I think that...
We haven't decided yet. I guess we just need to actually pick one.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have a poll open for that, too. I don't know. Keep your eyes out for it, basically. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Rolo T. I'm at White Ruler of Time. Also, at WMR Podcast. And check us out on weeklymongrecap.podbean.com. And send additional questions for us to answer on a later Q&A episode of the show to weeklymongrecap@yahoo.com. And special thanks to Steve Mattertakarst and The Infamous Planet and Felix Stark for visual editions of our podcast. And yeah, I said The Infamous Planet. I swear, that was the first thing he said the first time we ever talked was, you keep on saying The Infamous Planet, not The Infamous Planet. I was like, shut the fuck up and forward to your YouTube whenever I say that. how you control this car. This game is confusing.
How you play this game? Oh, I feel like you two would be fast friends, though.
We seem to get along after that.
All right. Anything else you want to bring up before the end of this?
I think I covered everything.
All right. Very good.
Not in the usual order, but whatever. Yeah,
we got it, though. So make sure, guys, check out the regular episode this week. And that's it, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye.